Blog Talk Radio.
So good Thursday evening. It is 8 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S., and that means it's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser. I'm Steve Laser, and I thank you for deciding to spend part of your evening with me. The election has come and gone. President Obama has won re-election. Democrats have held the Senate, picking up two additional Senate seats in the process, and picked up a few seats in the House of Representatives, although not enough to retake that chamber. We have a special show for this evening. There will be no sense and nonsense Hall of Fame and shame. It's all about what happened in the election, why, and its aftermath. I'm going to start off talking about why the Democrats won and why the Republicans lost. Then I'll give my thoughts on what happens to the Republican Party in the wake of their big loss. After that, I'll talk more about where I'd like to see President Obama take domestic and foreign policy in his second term, and note what I think is a lesson learned for Democrats going forward after the experience of Obama's first term. At any time during the show, if you want to call in and talk with me, please do so. Call-in number for the show is 917-889-3891. So let's get started. Why did the Democrats win, and why did the Republicans lose? Well, let's start off with the fact that President Obama won this election with the highest percentage of the Latino vote in the history of U.S. presidential elections. With Latinos being a growing demographic in the United States, that has to scare the daylights out of the leadership of the GOP. So why did the president do so well among Latinos? Well, first off, you have to give a lot of credit to the DREAM Act put into practice by the executive order of President Obama. And it paid big dividends at the polls. I've talked about the DREAM Act on Making Sense before. To sum it up, the DREAM Act gives conditional permanent residency to certain undocumented residents of good moral character who graduate from U.S. high schools, arrived in the U.S. as minors, and lived in the country continuously for at least 5 years prior to the bill's enactment. If they were to complete 2 years in the military or 2 years at a four-year institution of higher learning, they would obtain temporary residency for a six-year period. Those are the basics of the DREAM Act. Immensely popular among Latinos. And the DREAM Act was a concrete step to which Latinos could point and say President Obama was doing something compassionate about the issue of undocumented immigrants. Now, while they liked the DREAM Act, you know, we've got to be honest. You know, this is a show about being fact-based and making sense. While Latinos liked the DREAM Act, they had been hoping for something more comprehensive on the undocumented issue. As the commentary goes, Latinos might have been slightly disappointed by President Obama, but instead of capitalizing it, Latinos were horrified by some of the statements coming out of Romney and other prominent Republicans, things like self-deportation and all kinds of other really regressive policies on this issue, proposals on this issue. It was a no-brainer for most Latinos to pull the level for President Obama on Election Day, and I think they did by a margin of about 75% to 25% or less for Mitt Romney. Now, I feel I need to add one additional note about this. After the election, when you heard Republicans talking about the Latino vote, you heard them saying that they think they can appeal to Latino voters pretty much exclusively by running conservative Latino candidates. You know, that is not going to work any more than Clarence Thomas or Alan Keyes appealed to black voters. Latinos care about things like good public schools for their children. They care about having universal health care. They care about a comprehensive immigration policy that is compassionate to fellow Latinos trying to immigrate to the United States. Simply running a conservative Latino who is against all or most of those things isn't going to do it for you, GOP. Sorry to be the one to tell you. Another reason why President Obama won was the auto bailout. And I'm sure you've all heard a lot about this, but I think it bears repeating. The auto bailout put Michigan and Ohio completely out of the reach of Republicans. The 48% that Romney got in Ohio is probably the highest that any Republican could have mustered in that state against the president. It's actually a pretty good metric that Romney was able to achieve, but there's no higher that he could have gone in that state. No poll showed him ever going higher in that state. Regarding the bailout, that was an immense risk that the president took, and he was rightly rewarded for it. It could have gone bad and failed in any number of ways. He led us through that auto bailout expertly. It didn't fail, and a million U.S. jobs were saved. Ohioans didn't forget that, and they didn't buy Mitt Romney's revisionist attempt to say he would have done the same thing. Another reason why the president won and Democrats did well, the Republican Party's attempt to take abortion rights and contraceptive rights away from women, even in cases of rape or incest, ensured that the gender gap from previous elections would continue in 2012, and Democrats won the women's vote by a large margin. All the Republicans who made some of the more outlandish statements on rape, the Murdochs, the Aikens, they're defeated. A similar issue is that 90% of the lesbian and gay vote went to Obama. Now, I don't see going forward how the Republicans deal with this in the short term. The religious right, which is one of the bigger parts of the Republican base, provides a lot of the activists and get out the vote effort during election time. The religious right demands the Republicans take positions that are anti-women's rights, that are anti-gay rights, and the Republicans are stuck there for the foreseeable future as a result. Now, a tweet from Alec Baldwin this morning summed up Republicans' problems with women in this election. You know things are bad with your party when after Election Day you ask, how did the rape guy do? And you get the response, which one? That's the reality of Republicans and the women's vote in election 2012. Now, in the last couple of years, we've talked a lot about Citizens United and what kind of effect that would have on elections. I will say we can definitely conclude that it resulted in way too much money being spent in this election. I believe the latest tally was $5.8 billion or $6 billion. Some sort of ridiculous amount of money was spent on this election. But the big money donors on the Republican side were not able to affect the presidential race, at least not the ultimate outcome. I think what they probably were able to do was affect the House and local races. I wonder if anybody is going to be able to put together any sort of analysis on this. It'd probably be very difficult number crunching. But just think about this. There aren't too many elections where you've had one party win the presidency and win seats in the Senate, but not make a significant gain in the House. The House is usually where you see the most movement, not the Senate. It's much easier for big money to overwhelm opponents in local races. I mean, in a House race, $500,000 or $1 million or $3 million is a big deal. In state legislator or state Senate races, a couple of $100,000 is a big deal. You can imagine how much some of these big donors could have given to Republicans in close races in the state legislature. And it'll be interesting to see, again, if anybody can crunch the numbers on those sorts of things and see what effect it had. I think the big money is why Democrats didn't win more House seats and make a run at taking back the House of Representatives. Another issue in this election, attempts at voter suppression by an organization called True the Vote were turned back. In several states, this new Tea Party organization called True the Vote attempted to engage in different kinds of voter suppression. Nowhere was this more true than in Florida. Florida permits private citizens to issue challenges to the registration of voters, something that needs to be fixed right away. That is insane. A True the Vote organization in Florida attempted to challenge the registration of several thousand voters. Now, all of these attempts came back with the conclusion that these voters who were challenged were actually legitimately registered. Now, this attempt may backfire badly because Florida law says if you frivolously challenge a voter's registration, it's a felony. So various folks in Florida's True the Vote organization may have, in fact, opened themselves up to felony charges. That's something that we're going to have to follow over the next couple of weeks. In Pennsylvania, various election officials, including one that dialed into this show Tuesday night to talk to us, related stories about True the Vote groups showing up at the polling places trying to intimidate voters. In several situations, including the one that the caller on Tuesday related to us, the district attorneys and police forces in those areas had to force these folks to leave the polling areas. As we talk about some of the reasons why Romney lost, I think we have to say that Paul Ryan was a terrible vice presidential choice. That's two bad vice presidential choices in a row that the Republican Party nominees have made. The most obvious evidence of Paul Ryan being a bad choice is that he failed to do the most basic thing required of a vice presidential pick. He couldn't help his ticket carry his home state. Now, in addition to that cardinal sin, Ryan engaged in serial exaggerations, like he climbed all of the several dozen tallest mountains in Colorado, that he ran a sub-3-hour marathon. All of these claims he and his campaign had to walk back and distracted voters from the message that the Romney campaign was trying to put out. Ryan also had this odd photo op at a soup kitchen where he wasn't invited. He and his delegation arrived long after the poor and homeless who were being served by that soup kitchen had left. And despite all of that, he picked up an already clean pot and scrubbed it for the cameras. I don't think Paul Ryan got the fact that this was a national election, a presidential election. And in those types of situations, you get a lot of scrutiny. You cannot get away with things like that. And his actions were widely reported and subjected his ticket to a lot of embarrassment. You didn't hear, actually, very much from Paul Ryan after the disaster of that photo op. And in the last couple of days of the campaign, someone in the Romney campaign leaked the idea. Who knows if it's true or not? Maybe we'll hear in the coming weeks. But the idea was leaked that Chris Christie was actually Romney's first choice for a vice presidential running mate, but that he concluded that Christie was a little bit too rough around the edges for what he wanted. And in the waning days of the campaign, Romney surrogates, at the very least, if not Romney himself, were expressing buyer's remorse with a Ryan pick. Can't say I blame him. Ryan did absolutely nothing for that ticket. An interesting factoid about the election: Romney has 2 million less votes than McCain got last time. McCain got 59.9 million votes in 2008. Mitt Romney has about 57.9 million votes now. That's a pretty stunning metric. Because both of the last two elections, President Obama got over 60 million votes, getting nearly 61 million this year and 69 million in 2008. That's going to be a very interesting threshold to watch. Are Republicans able ever again to get over 60 million votes? Are the demographics, the fact that they're Latinos are a growing demographic and other minority groups are growing demographics, does that mean that Republicans have a ceiling now of somewhere between 55 and 59 million votes, and Democrats are able to get in the 60 millions. An additional interesting factoid of this election, 20 women will now hold Senate seats, the most ever. So congratulations to those women who will be seated in January. And New Hampshire has an entire congressional delegation filled by women and a woman governor. First time that has ever happened in American history. You're listening to Making Sense with Steve Laser. We're talking about and recapping the election. So what's going to happen to the Republican Party post-election? Well, the last 4 years were spent by Republicans in the pursuit of one thing to the exclusion of all others, and that's denying President Obama a second term by obstructing his agenda and demonizing it. Now, that's bad enough, right? But considering we were in the middle of an economic crisis, and now they have failed. Republicans wasted the last 4 years in a futile pursuit for which they have nothing to show. In fact, I contend that Republicans stopped being Americans in 2009. Americans historically come together during a crisis. Americans came together during the Great Depression. Americans came together during both world wars. Americans came together after 9/11, giving George W. Bush a 95% approval rating to show support for him dealing with the aftermath of that crisis. Republicans did not do that in 2009, haven't done it since. It's like their party became their nationality, and they stopped being Americans. The question a lot of folks are asking is, what will they do now? Do they continue to obstruct the president? That proved to ultimately be a losing strategy. I think we all can see that now. I think the American people are going to have even less patience for that going forward than they have over the last few years. Americans want solutions, and they want President Obama and the leadership of the House Republicans to work together to resolve our very serious economic issues. But one thing I've been thinking a lot about, let's say, for argument's sake, that John Boehner wants to work with President Obama. I don't think that's going to happen, but I hope that's what they do. But if the Republicans and John Boehner decide they're going to change course and do that, how do they explain that to their base and the rest of the American people? I mean, if someone is an evil Muslim Marxist traitor, as they've essentially portrayed Obama to their base, how does Boehner explain doing a 180 and working with him? See, that's part of the tragedy of the Republican strategy over the past 4 years, the near irreparable destructiveness of it. One of the things people are talking about is whether a civil war in the Republican Party will ensue. Already some party moderates like Meghan McCain, and although I like Meghan McCain, I'm not sure exactly how much of a following she has, but she's saying things like that the party needs to get with reality, and the far right is countering that, saying that Romney didn't win because he wasn't conservative enough. Now, those differing viewpoints are hard to reconcile, but, you know, as Joe Scarborough said on Morning Joe this morning, these really are nothing new in terms of the aftermath of a losing presidential campaign. You know, every 4 years, the losing party is being talked as if they're finished. You know, they're not going to be able to pull things together 4 years from now. The party is it's the end of that party. All those sorts of things that you hear. We'll have to see what the Republicans do. It seemed like it was the end of them 4 years ago, and they managed to find a way back. We'll have to see. But in terms of working with the president, I mean, the first indication that we got was yesterday morning. House Republicans, it doesn't seem, are going to work with the president. Speaker Boehner had a press conference and expressed the sentiment that he is willing to work with the president, but then took the very same things off the table that were off the table for the last 4 years. He said that he's not willing to consider new or additional taxes on businesses or the wealthy. So as far as Republican attitudes, so far there is no change. So off the bat, we can see that we have a massive fight on our hands between the president and House Republicans, exactly what we don't need in the country right now. We need, speaking of the Republicans and what we need Republicans to start being reality-based. Republicans have been trying to retreat into a false version of reality for the last several years. That trend seems to be accelerating, and it needs to stop. I mean, the most recent bit of non-reality they've been engaging in is disbelieving the polls. When the polls started showing that Mitt Romney was behind, several months ago, really, they engaged in this campaign to try to discredit the polls. They tried to discredit Nate Silver and other poll aggregators. An entire website was put up called unskewedpolls.com. Ridiculous prognostications were put up on unskewedpolls.com claiming that Mitt Romney was going to win by 25% in the popular vote, that he was going to win 45 states. All kinds of crazy stuff were put out there. Fact of the matter is, polls are very rarely wrong in the last 20, 30 years. And they weren't wrong this time. Nate Silver pretty much had every single state right. But what we see here, and this is a recurring theme that I'll talk about here over the next few minutes, when Republicans don't like reality, they pretend that an alternate reality exists. That's what they did here with unskewedpolls.com. It's a very destructive and obstructive thing to do in terms of this country. One of the other things that they've been doing over the last couple of years, they've been acting as if the economic crisis started with President Obama and George W. Bush had nothing to do with it. I think the American people rejected that view of reality this past Tuesday. I think the American public was smart enough to recognize that on January 2009, when President Obama was inaugurated, this economy was in free fall. We were losing 800,000 jobs a month. It wasn't clear at all if the financial system would survive. But Republicans wanted to pretend like that wasn't the case, like almost as if human history began January 21st, 2009. That's not reality. You can craft a good argument for somebody potentially doing a better job economically than President Obama that doesn't deny the reality of what happened, of what the situation was when he came to office. Didn't do that. Now, in the last year, one of the more ugly things Republicans have been doing, in my opinion, is they've started attacking fact-check organizations, even though these organizations provide links to facts that back up their assertions. I said to a Republican that I had a debate with a couple of weeks ago on my friend Arlene Beschinger's In the Q radio show, that if you're now engaging in an attack on fact-check organizations because you don't like what they're saying, when they have copious backup and links to all of the facts, you're in trouble. This country is in trouble if Republicans are no longer accepting facts that disagree with their ideology. You know, Republicans, along the same line, have been attacking the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office whenever that organization says something that is in any way good for President Obama. This is just, you know, a big problem that we have in this country. If you can't agree on any basic facts, then you can't move this country forward. You can't be a partner at the table, at the negotiating table, on any issue. And you know, I thought it was bad that in the last 30 or 40 years, conservatives in the U.S. have created hundreds of think tanks because they disagree with peer-reviewed studies coming out of universities. They think that those types of studies on economics and foreign policy and things like that are too liberally biased. So they created these conservative think tanks in order so that these organizations would promulgate research that promotes the conservative view. That's bad enough. That's something that's been going on for a long time. But these latest things, the attacks on the fact-check organizations, the attacks on the polling organizations, the attacks on the Congressional Budget Office, that's really new territory that's pretty scary. And in terms of the budget and honest negotiations and facing reality, when asked a year or so ago, Republicans indicated that they would not accept a budget compromise that cut $10 in spending for every dollar raised in taxes. That's just extraordinary. How do you compromise with a group of folks behaving like that? I'm afraid for this country, even though we Democrats just won this election. I am afraid for this country if one of the only two major parties is adopting these kinds of attitudes. We're in a serious situation in this country. We need all leaders of both parties engaged in solving our problems, not putting party before country. Republicans, remember, you're Americans. That's your nationality. That's where you owe your loyalty, not to your party. You're listening to Making Sense with Steve Laser. Let's talk about some of the pressing domestic policy issues in President Obama's second term. First off, I live in New York, and I have to say on behalf of myself and my neighbors, Republicans, are we ready to talk global warming yet? I want to talk directly to any Republicans who might be listening to this live or might be listening eventually to archives of this show. How many more Hurricane Sandys and supercharged hurricanes and nor'easters will it take? Clearly, the president wants to do something about global warming. Most of the rest of the world wants to do something about global warming. But Republicans are clinging to the idea, the non-reality-based idea, that the facts are not in. Republicans have been trying to dispute that climate change is happening and that it is man-made. This goes back to the whole denial of reality thing I was talking about earlier. Republicans, get with the program. We have a serious crisis on our hands with climate change, and we need to figure out how to come up with a solution that reverses the warming trend. Also, regarding domestic policy, can we have a compromise where we raise taxes on the wealthy and cut some spending? Will Republicans continue to refuse to make any deal where anyone's taxes are raised? I mean, the fiscal cliff is coming. Basically, every nonpartisan organization that has analyzed this has said, if a compromise isn't reached, that puts good economic policies, tax and spending policies into place in an agreement that averts this fiscal cliff, we're going to be headed for a recession in 2013. People are going to lose their jobs. Companies are going to fail. We need the Republicans to deal. The president is willing to deal. Republicans need to deal. Also on domestic policy, you know, Latinos, who were a big part of the reason why this president was reelected, they're going to demand a return on investment for their votes, and rightly so. It'll be very interesting to see how the Republicans react to this. Republicans want a piece of the Latino vote. They'll have a chance to earn it over the next couple of years. We need a comprehensive immigration policy based on reality. We need these workers here. I've talked about this before. Undocumented immigrants occupy several million apartments throughout the country. If tomorrow we sent all of these undocumented immigrants home, and I'm not saying that we should, I'm not an advocate of anything like that. If we sent these undocumented immigrants home, all of a sudden we would have millions of extra unoccupied apartments and houses throughout the country. We already have a housing crisis. It does not take an economic genius to figure out what that would mean to the housing market in this country. Let undocumented immigrants caught the price of our food because they pick it at a wage that American citizens would not pick it. They cook our food in our restaurants. They serve our food. There are so many ways that undocumented immigrants fit into our economy to where we need them. You may not like that we need them. We need them. We need a comprehensive policy to deal with this issue. And Latinos have spoken up in this election, and they deserve to have these issues addressed. Now, I understand. We also need to be able to control immigration like any other country does. There is a sound policy here that can be created that addresses all of these issues. Moving on to foreign policy in Obama's second term, you know, no offense, Mr. President. This is probably the closest thing that I'll come to criticizing the president. We need to implement a post-drone policy in Asia Minor. Now, I've supported drones, okay, as a temporary measure, because I think that there are terrorist groups out there who are trying to strike at America and our interests, and I support those groups being interdicted. But this is not a long-term solution. And in fact, in the long term, it might be contributing to the continuation and exacerbation of this problem. We're not making friends in Asia Minor with drones. We're doing the exact opposite. I understand in an emergency situation, if you know a person or a group is in the middle of a plot to attack the United States or attack Americans abroad, and you have to do something, but we need to implement an obvious post-drone policy. We need to look at the reasons why people in Asia Minor become radicalized in the first place and start dealing with those issues. And first and foremost, when I talk about reasons in Asia Minor, why people become radicalized, we need to put forth a maximum effort into an Israeli-Palestinian peace initiative that provides a state and full self-determination to Palestinians. Now, this is something, if done, and I know it's difficult, nobody has to tell me that, this is something that would destroy the terrorist groups at their source long before people become radicalized. Now, I am a realist. This show is about making sense and the facts. I know that this is almost impossible to conceive of this happening, being able to do this, with the current Israeli leadership. I think Netanyahu and in Likud's position is to hold out at all costs against giving the Palestinians statehood. But the good news is Netanyahu's attempt to back Romney has created major problems for U.S.-Israeli relations. That's not a good thing. But the good thing about that is it might bring Netanyahu and Likud down in the coming Israeli elections in January. Labor Party coming back to power in Israel would be a great thing for really the entire world. My contention is that if Labor Party Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin had not been assassinated, we would have had a Palestinian state 20 years ago or so. And I think that really would have altered the reality in the Middle East. I think it would have diffused a lot of the anger in the Arab and Muslim world. We need a pragmatic labor prime minister to come to power in Israel who will work with President Obama to put this issue to bed once and for all and give full self-determination to the Palestinian people. Now, I want to make sure any people listening to this understand something. I am Jewish. I am the son of a Holocaust survivor. My father was in concentration camp for 4 years or so in Germany. My grandmother and grandfather and uncle died in the concentration camps. Israel and its security and its continued existence is extremely important to me. But that doesn't change the fact that I believe that all people deserve the ability to be self-determined. And it has gone on too long. The Palestinians deserve a state. They should be, you know, given a state. And not only that, my feeling is that to foment goodwill, there are hundreds of thousands, if not more, Palestinians in refugee camps in horrible conditions. Why not send the Army Corps of Engineers into the new Palestinian state, Air Force Civil Engineering, Navy Seabees, construction battalions of all sorts, and build housing, factories, roads, bridges in this new Palestinian state to really make it viable and vibrant and really show not just the Palestinians, but the people throughout the entire region who America really is. We're not about drones. Well, we may have been in the past. We may have been about certain things that I wish we weren't about. But let's bring a new reality and a new concept of what America is about into the lives of the people in Asia Minor. We can do this. We can change the mind of a lot of the people in this region. It just takes the will. It just takes the president and a willing partner in Israel, and we can get this done. And I don't want to go too far off a tangent onto that that point of view. But finally tonight, getting back to the election, I think that there are a couple of lessons to be learned for Democrats from President Obama's first term. First, you know, unless things change about Republicans and how they behave, when Democrats come to power in the midst of an economic crisis as bad as this last one was, we need to go big in the response. We need to think Roosevelt-type alphabet programs where the government directly puts unemployed people to work on crucial infrastructure projects. And we need to put everything else on the domestic front aside in an economic crisis, accept the economy and jobs, and put people back to work. Once that happens, we can take on, you know, domestic priorities like healthcare reform and things like that. But I think the perception that Republicans were able to create, that we went ahead with healthcare reform to the detriment of working on jobs, even though it wasn't true, the perception, though, was able to be controlled by them. And that put us in a position where we had a real shot at losing this election. Of course, the Republicans' idea of what to do about it is cut taxes. That's the wrong approach. We don't need to listen to that. But we need to be Democrats. There are a lot of infrastructure projects that need to be done. We have a crumbling infrastructure in this country. There are hundreds of bridges all over the country in disrepair. There are roads that need fixing. There are several issues almost as serious as the levee issues were in New Orleans before Katrina hit. You know, that was on a list of Army Corps engineers' most critical projects that needed to be done. It wasn't funded. Use the power of the federal government to hire people until the economy gets moving again and until the private sector can hire them. I don't want to create a permanent situation where more people are employed by the government. That's what Republicans would probably try to portray what I just said as. That's not what I want. Just like what we did with the auto bailout, we bail out the auto industry until they can pay us back. We don't really want to take over the auto industry, but we want to help them. I don't really want the government to permanently be employing all these people. It's just so the private sector can hire them again. The other thing that we have to remember, until reality changes, we can't count on Republicans doing the right thing, even in the worst crises imaginable. That's a tough lesson that we need to learn. That's a lesson that I think many of us don't want to accept, but it's true. As I said earlier, I think Republicans forgot they were Americans over the last 4 years. They really did. They ignored the fact that we were in the middle of this horrible crisis and people were hurting, and they focused on attacking the president. Democrats have to be aware that if they come to power in a bad situation, they may not get any help. And they have to account for that in their approach. I think that's one mistake that the president made. It's an easy mistake to make. It's a mistake I would have made. How can you have ever possibly imagined that in that kind of a serious economic crisis, that one party would say, no, the economic crisis, that's not our most important thing. Our most important thing is attacking this president, making sure he's a one-term president. They did that. That's the historical fact of President Obama's first term. Well, that's all I have for our special show this evening. I thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at noon Eastern Time this Sunday, November 11th. Until then, have a great evening and rest of your week. You can catch me on TV. I appear tomorrow on Peter Lavelle's excellent crosstalk show on the RT Network to talk about the election results. It's going to play several times throughout the day tomorrow, so tune in and take a look. I'm debating Rachel Marsden on the aftermath of the election. Until next Sunday, again, have a great evening and rest of your week, and thank you for spending part of your Thursday evening with me.